You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret, and we're hearing Howard Guitar Ludke, one of the many great musicians from Eau Claire's musical history. The city has become known nationwide as the hometown of Justin Vernon, frontman for the band Bon Iver, but the area has had a rich and long musical scene for decades, and a new project is making sure that musical history gets preserved. Faculty and students at UW-Eau Claire held a history harvest earlier this month, inviting people to bring in documents, instruments, or just their own stories about music in the city. They'll be part of a digital archive and a series of new podcasts that are in the works. Dan Ott is leading the project. He's a visiting assistant professor of history at UW-Eau Claire. Dan, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, Dan, what led you and others there into this project to dig into Eau Claire's musical history?
I came to Eau Claire as a public historian, and the key thing that we do is we try to figure out what sort of history is relevant to the community that we're in and try and do projects that focus on that and get our students doing projects that are about history that people care about. The city of Eau Claire is going through sort of a musical moment probably in the last 5 years, really since Bon Iver, Justin Vernon, won a Grammy in 2012 and publicly thanked Eau Claire on national television. The city is sort of unified behind this idea of it being a music destination and having a musical culture. And so we decided to sort of dig into that because people in the community of Eau Claire, businesses, the university, nonprofits, the municipality, are very, very interested in music here. And so we're trying to figure out, you know, where did this come from and what are its dimensions and what are its roots?
Well, as you're learning more and more, that history, I guess, goes way back before 2012. Can you talk about Eau Claire's musical heritage a little bit?
I think that there's probably a couple of layers that we need to think about when we think about music in Eau Claire. The first one is not that unique to Eau Claire particularly, but just sort of the upper Midwest, that we have a lot of different cultural traditions associated with music, going back to indigenous communities like the Ojibwe, but also including old stock Europeans, Germans, Czechs, Scandinavians who moved to the area, right? So you sort of start with that base layer and then add on top of that a University of Wisconsin school, or it started off as a normal school for teacher education at the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire today, but it started 100 years ago in 1916, really focusing on teacher education and musical education as a part of that. So that's sort of one of these really, really important threads in this, is the development of that, of our school, and also the ways in which it supports music and has really cultivated a musical community among students, as well as creating a really, really top-notch musical department and music program, teacher education, jazz, classics, symphony, whatever, that has been around for quite some time. So that's sort of the second layer. And the third layer is that we have an interesting intersection with popular music starting in the 1950s and 1960s as a result of I-94 going by, very close by, or through Eau Claire, and providing us with a nice stopping spot for big-name musicians and bands on their way between Chicago and Minneapolis. And so they would stop over, and you'd have people like Buddy Holly played in 1959 in Eau Claire. Frank Zappa played in the 1970s. A whole Ike and Tina Turner played there, right? So we have this interesting sort of more intimate experience in very, very small venues going back to the 1960s and 1970s with sort of national popular music that sort of, I think, in some ways gave people in Eau Claire a different experience than most of the nation had, because they're able to have this direct and intimate interaction in small venues that other people usually would just have at large venues or over the radio or on their LPs and their record table, their record player, right? So those are sort of the three major things that sort of cultivated an interesting musical heritage in this area. And then you sort of combine that with the more recent emergence of Bon Iver and the community getting behind this idea of a musical identity to sort of create a unique musical moment in the city as it's sort of trying to reinvent itself and has been since the decline of manufacturing in the 1990s and really has settled on music as the way forward, along with education, healthcare, and technology, as where the future of the city is going to be.
Public historian Dan Ott is with us. He's a visiting assistant professor of history at UW-Eau Claire. We're talking about a project he's working on with students there and community members trying to dig up the musical history, the longstanding musical history of Eau Claire. And Dan, let's get into that project now. You had people harvesting various kinds of things. What kind of things are you looking for?
Well, we really didn't know what we were going to find. We just knew that we didn't have much of a collection in terms of artifacts or papers related to music in the region, but we knew it was important. And so we really invited literally anyone to come in. We promoted it widely, newspapers, radio, this kind of thing, word of mouth, to have people come in and share what they had, stories, artifacts, whatever, to walk in the door. And so what we found when we had this event on March 3rd at the Chippewa Valley Museum, we found just a real interesting breadth. So at the oldest end of things, we got an 1880s fiddle that walked in the door. A gentleman had recently acquired it from his family. It had been his great-great-grandfather's, who had played this fiddle in a logging camp.
Wow.
Right? And then to give you sort of the other end of the spectrum, we had a guy named Nate Sorensen come in and share his collection of posters and memorabilia from running a hardcore and punk rock show in his mom's basement for 11 years called Nate's Dungeon. Right? So it gives you a broad tapestry of musical history in the area. And, you know, in between, we wound up with a lot of scrapbooks from decades-old community singing community organizations like the Master Singers and the Male Chorus, sharing sort of this rich history of community engagement in the arts. We had people bring in scrapbooks from the 1950s related to Dixieland jazz festivals. A lot of people who are long-term musicians in the area tell their stories about where they used to gig and who they used to play with and what sort of things were popular at any given time. So we really saw this broad cross-section of musical interest come through the doorway, which was really fantastic for me. We had no idea, and it was elating for my students, who really were, you know, I told them that we were going to do this thing, and they were like, well, what's going to happen? And, you know, people responded. We had about 200 people show up at the event. About 40 people actually had the opportunity to contribute objects. So we wound up with about 3,000 items that we wound up digitizing, which we are preserving at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire Special Collection and Archive, and we're also going to create an online exhibit component of this so that people can page through the stuff that the community provided and hopefully get some good insight into the deeper roots of the musical moment in Eau Claire and the Chippewa Valley.
And Dan, I understand you're going to get some podcasts out of this as well.
Yeah, so we started this collaboration. This project, the Sounds of Eau Claire project, started about a year ago as an oral history project. And we started by doing about 11 the first semester and then 13 oral histories the following semester after that in collaboration with the local radio station, Blue Gold Radio, which is a partnership with the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire Foundation. And my students then had the opportunity to take these oral histories and produce them into radio segments, sort of highlighting the best parts of hour-and-a-half-long oral histories.
What kind of stories are you hearing?
Well, the stories that we wind up hearing are really... It sort of varies based on what we asked. So we had stories about, we talked to a guy named Jim Bischel, who was responsible for founding Country Jam, and Larry Barr, who's also responsible for this, and they tell the stories of how they wound up getting into this sort of festival business. We heard stories from people in the University of Wisconsin Music Department telling longer histories of the jazz program, Ron Kiesner and Bob Baca. We had people talk about what it's been like more recently on the music scene for the last 10 to 15 years. Jerrica Miguel sort of shared her stories about being a folk musician in Eau Claire. And we really have this great sort of breadth of experience to sort of draw on and share these stories. And it's been sort of fantastic. I'm actually really looking forward to getting to the point where we're going to make these podcasts out of these newer stuff we've gotten as well. Because we have stories about this guy brought in a 1920s bass drum that his grandfather, I believe, used to play on, as well as this entire kit, around the region at dance halls as part of a dance band. And so his his family would follow along with him to these various venues, and the kids would wind up after the gig would wind up sleeping underneath the stage, right? And so you get these sort of fantastic stories about what music used to be like, because music is a very, very different experience today, where we think about podcasts and the radio versus what music had been like, which was much more personal. You had to be more in the room with musicians. I mean, not so much in the 1920s, but, you know, sort of, right? You don't necessarily have the way music is accessible today is very, very different than how it used to be, and sort of the emphasis on particular artists was not as important as actually the place you would go hear a musician play a cover or play just sheet music. So you'd have the opportunity to go socialize, to go dance, to go meet people. And it's just a very, very different musical culture today than it used to be.
Just briefly, Dan, as we wrap up, if somebody's listening in the area and says, hey, I've got something I want to share, can they still do that?
Absolutely. We're actually doing a follow-up event at the University of Wisconsin on April 14th. So we're doing a overflow event because we had so many people that came in. So, if you're interested in contributing to the project, it's on April 14th from 11 to 4 at the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire Archives.
Dan, thanks a lot for joining us. Really great project.
Thank you so much, Rob. I greatly appreciate it.
That's Dan Ott, visiting assistant professor of history at UW-Eau Claire. He is leading a project to preserve the area's music history with documents, artifacts, and recorded interviews. Go out to the news with the UW-Eau Claire Jazz Ensemble. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.